Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today. Fall color is peaking in much of the state. Leaves are falling, but there's still a little bit of work to do before you put your mower away for the winter. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here in a few minutes to answer your questions about the plants in your life. But we're going to start with the lawn and turf grass specialist, Adam Toms of Iowa State University. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And this is the time of year when I get pretty anxious to be done doing things with my lawn. But so let's start with that. When do I get to stop mowing and how do I know?
Yeah, so the weather's starting to get less and less favorable for turf grass growth. And so we're starting to get to a point where we really don't need to mow as often as we were earlier in the year. Typically, we say that, you know, once your daytime temperatures are in the 50s, the grass is really going to stop growing for the year. One of the biggest things right now that a lot of people are probably still mowing for is those leaves in their yard. And that's probably the biggest reason why you need to keep mowing your yard, is just to mulch those leaves up and get them off the turf canopy and down into the soil.
All right. Well, let's talk about that, because when dealing with leaves, we have sort of an old-fashioned system. We have some newer ideas. What do we do with our leaves?
Right. So what do you do with your leaves is, you know, really up to you. The biggest thing is that, you know, for turf to thrive and live, obviously it needs sunlight. And so having a bunch of leaves piled up on the surface is going to prevent that sunlight. And so whether you rake the leaves or run your mower over them and chop them up and mulch them back in is kind of your choice. But leaving them on the surface of the ground just kind of smothers out the grass and doesn't allow it to produce the food it needs. So that's kind of the big holdup there as far as that goes. Really, it's either way you do it. If you return them through mulching, it's kind of a free fertilization, as the leaves have some nutrients in them. And so it's a great option. But I know a lot of people that, you know, will rake up their leaves and put them other spots in their yard, as far as, you know, around beds, things like that, to help kind of insulate plants. And that's perfectly fine, too.
Well, the mulching just feels like a win-win-win all the way around. I don't like mowing, but I also don't like raking. And mowing is, right, is a much better option.
Right. Yeah, it's a great option. It's a lot easier for you. You know, you don't have to deal with trying to move the leaves and the wind coming in and blowing the pile apart. On the other hand, if you have kids, they miss out on that chance to jump in the big leaf pile.
Well, so you can mulch it after they've spread them all out from the leaf pile again. I mean, this feels like a sea change is happening on raking, though. I feel like I am seeing fewer and fewer people raking their leaves to the curbside. Do you feel like that is becoming obsolete?
Yeah, I really do. I think, you know, there's been advancements as well in mower technology and better blades that chop up the leaves quicker, and so it's not as many passes over the yard. So it's doing a better job of making a finer leaf particle, which, you know, does a better job. And yeah, we're seeing less and less people raking them off. So,
all right. Well, I think that sounds like good news for everybody. And let's talk about conditions for lawns right now, because of course it has been a pretty dry fall. What does that mean if turf grass is something you care about?
Yeah, and so it's been very dry, and that's, you know, a lot of times turf can go for long stretches and it kind of goes into a dormancy. One of the things that we're nervous about is if you reseeded your yard this fall to try to get it back. You know, a lot of the state received some moisture in mid-September, but it's been really dry ever since. And so if you've got little seedlings that are coming up, you're going to want to give it several shots of water here just at the end of the season to try to help overwinter it. These this last week has been really hard on it with the warmer temperatures and the strong winds. It's really dried the surface, and so those seedlings are really suffering from being dried out from the wind.
All right. And of course, that's almost over as well. We want to make sure there's enough moisture, but it's also a time to think about weed control, if that's something that's important to you too. What's important there?
Yeah, so weed control is, you know, now's a great time to treat for broadleaf weeds. And so if that's, you know, a concern of yours or you want to get broadleaf weeds out, we typically say you can spray after the first frost as well, and that just, you know, the first frost will kill out any annuals, and so we don't have to worry about, you know, any annual injury or things like that. The herbicide's still going to get taken up by the plant and moved where it needs to be. So the one thing to keep in mind with any herbicide control is obviously it has to get onto the plant that you're wanting to control. And so, again, if you've got a bunch of leaves on your yard, mow those up first. To get those off the yard, then spray your herbicide. It doesn't do any good to spray a bunch of leaves that are down on the ground.
Right. Well, and you mentioned, of course, mulching up your leaves. That's kind of a free fertilization for your lawn. Should we also be thinking about other kinds of fertilization?
Yeah, and that's a great point, too. Now's a wonderful time to feed your yard for next season. And so whatever it's taking in right now for nutrients, and fertilizer, it's actually storing in the growth point. And so that's going to be prime there for coming out of dormancy in the spring. And it's going to give you a greener yard quicker. So, you know, you don't have to look at a brown yard as long in the spring.
All right. And I have two callers already, Adam, with the exact same question for you. So I'm going to let Carol ask you this question. It's on the subject of leaves and lawn. Carol's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a wonderful black walnut tree in my backyard, and number one is mulching with the mower these leaves into the ground going to hurt anything? And number two, can I put black walnut leaves in my compost?
All right. Of course, walnut trees are a little bit tricky. They're not great to grow things around. What do you think about walnut leaves, Adam?
Yeah, I think they're just fine to put out in the yard and mulch back in. That's not going to be a problem there. We've seen, you know, we've never seen any negative effects there. In some cases, some trees have shown a little bit of ability, especially oak leaves, have shown that actually there's less weeds present when they're mulched back in.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm more and more sold with everything you tell me, Adam.
Yep.
So black walnut leaves shouldn't be a problem in your lawn. How about in your compost? Maybe that's not your area.
Right. I don't believe that would be a problem either. It'll be broke down enough by the time you use the compost. It shouldn't, as far as I know.
All right. You know what? I'm going to bring Aaron Stile into the conversation because I'll bet that is in his area. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
Hi. So what do you think about black walnut leaves in the compost?
Well, most of the time, especially in the leaves of black walnut, it breaks down the compound that causes the toxicity issues that we see with black walnut juglone. Usually breaks down. It depends on how good your compost pile is working and how the microbes are working, but anywhere from 2 to 6 months, it's gone in your compost pile. So if you have a really active pile that gets nice and warm and for the most part breaks down pretty quickly, you'd be closer to 2 months. If you have a more passive pile that kind of sits there and maybe isn't as managed, it might be closer to 6 months, but it's usable after that.
All right. And 6 months is what we've got between now and when we need to use that compost, possibly. So that's good news. Carol, thank you so much for your call. You are listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and you can call with any questions lawn-related or not. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Adam Dave in Norwalk says, why is it good or not good to put lime down on your lawn this time of year?
Yeah, that's a good question. So You know, I get a lot of questions about lime and what to do. And lime helps change the soil pH. So make sure you have a soil test done first. And that's really important there as far as that goes. As far as putting it down this time of the year, you know, typically we like to put lime out, and it will help in the spring again as far as setting you up for a good growing season, making sure that the soil pH is in the correct range for plant growth.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we've already got a lot of people with questions today. This is from David in Iowa City. Small white flowers bloomed this last week. Are they frost asters or daisy fleabane? Aaron, I know you can't see them. What do you think?
It's hard to know without a little bit more description. There's quite a few small white flowers out there, so I'm not sure.
All right. Well, David, you can send us a little more information if you like. But it is interesting. This time of year, we do see little blossoms still. And this time of year, I have seen a number of people sharing pictures of things blooming that are not meant to be blooming this time of year. I've even seen pictures of lilacs in bloom. That's pretty unusual, but not unheard of. Right, Aaron?
No, it's not unheard of. It was a pretty stressful summer for much of the state, in particular because of drought conditions. And that can force some plants into kind of a dormancy-like period. And then when it gets cooler, or we get some rain or both, which we have kind of earlier in this fall season, it kind of brings them out of that dormancy, and they're kind of tricked into some of those spring blooming things are tricked into blooming. It doesn't hurt the plant long term, but we probably will have fewer flowers next spring as a result.
All right. Well, it's nice that a lot of plants are dealing with our incredibly stressful summer in more beautiful ways than a lot of people are at this moment. I don't feel like I'm blooming, Aaron. But we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Adam Toms, Turf Grass Specialist with Iowa State University Extension. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR training program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, Adam Toms, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, a turf grass specialist as well. And he is here. Aaron is here. They're both here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. And let's get back to the phones. Next up, we've got Joe on the line in Burlington. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, so I live in an area where it's real sandy. It's kind of a fine sand and a dirt mix. I've never had I can't recall what the pH is on the soil, but over the years, I've planted, tall fescue because it roots deep, and I have planted mixture, Kentucky bluegrass in with it as well. But I heard there's a new variety of a tall fescue that creates rhizomes, and I was wondering how well that would do in a sandy soil, and then maybe also a different, what best variety of grass would do the best in this sandy soil without dying out, in the summer.
Adam, what do you think?
Yes. There is some varieties out there that claim to be weekly rhizomatists, as they call them. And I would say tall fescue is going to do better whether it's got the weak rhizomes as they advertise or not. Then like Kentucky bluegrass, as far as that goes, for the sandier soils. The biggest thing there is, you know, the more sandy the soil, the quicker it loses its moisture. Obviously, it drains very quickly. So I would suggest continuing to stick with a tall fescue. The more turf type tall fescues are getting better and better drought tolerance. And so I would look into that over trying to chase one that has rhizomes, as far as that goes. Just try to find, as you go to buy seed, you know, the most drought tolerant tall fescues out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you know any particular variety that does the best in sand, dry conditions?
You know, that's always a tough one. There is a website out there called NTEP.org, and that's the National Turfgrass Evaluation Program, and that evaluates all of the varieties that are being tested out there, and you can find tall fescue on there and see how it does in drought studies. And that's updated every year with specific cultivar performance. And so I would offer that you go there as far as that goes.
Okay, what was the website again? I didn't catch it all.
Yep, ntep.org, NTEP.org.
Joe, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. Sue is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I just got a box of Asian lily bulbs, and I was wondering if it was too late to go ahead and plant them. If it was too late, what should I do with them?
I would put them in the ground whenever you can here in the next week or two. It's a lot easier to plant them now than it is to try to hold on to them through the winter season. So I just get them in the ground, make sure you water them in, and go from there.
Okay. Should I put some mulch over them or something that would help retain the moisture and keep them a little warmer?
Mulch would be good. It'll also help keep down the weeds. So I think mulch would be good. 2 to 3 inches of whatever you prefer to use is going to work well.
All right. Sue, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Jill in Des Moines. Although, Jill, this question might be a little outside the expertise here, but what's your question?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I'm wondering if you could explain if it's bees and what other wildlife benefit from leaving things on the ground, maybe leaves and also garden items.
Okay, so if there's a pollinator benefit if we leave things instead of clearing out the garden and clearing the lawn?
And I think other wildlife too. I always keep seeing leave it, and then they don't really clarify which animals benefit. I mean, I know I'll leave berries and nuts, but besides that.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jill. And Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah. So leaving stuff in the garden over the winter does benefit a lot of native insects in particular, but and that would include some of those pollinators that she was referring to. But other animals that can benefit from kind of leaving some of that stuff stand over the winter, of course, are birds. And then the other group of animals are kind of like a lot of the small mammals benefit because it provides cover and a food source for things. Now, some of those small mammals, like chipmunks and mice, rabbits and other things like that, sometimes that's welcomed and sometimes that isn't. So you kind of have to make sure that you protect woody plants that are in areas that have a lot of that plant material still standing, because they may cause damage to the bark on those over the winter if they try to feed on them. And so if that happens, you'll want to either think about protecting those plants in future years or removing that cover for them for those particular plants. But certainly birds and other small mammals also benefit from that, leaving stuff stand over the winter.
866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Steve is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi. This is Steve. I was curious to know about whether our grasses are considered warm or cold grasses, and I asked that question because online there's a difference in relation to the height that they want you to end your grass with at the end of the year, whether it's supposed to be like 2 inches or 3 inches or what it is. Thank you.
Adam?
Yeah, so the ideal height of cut is, typically dependent on the growing conditions as far as that goes. So this time of the year in the fall, typically we have a little more moisture, cooler temps, so you can drop your mowing height down to 2 inches. We always say raise it up going into the summer months with drought to 3 inches. Kind of helps relieve the stress as far as that goes. So it's kind of variable. With this fall being very dry, I would not suggest dropping your height of cut down. If you've been at 3 inches, stay at it through the fall, just because it's been so dry.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Chad in Prairie City. Hi, Chad.
Hey, Charity, big fan.
Oh, thanks.
I have a question. I'm a big pollinator fan, and I like Dutch clover. I want my whole yard to be Dutch clover. What's the history? Why haven't we seen yards all Dutch clover? Or why is there a problem why I can't do it?
I don't know which one you want to take that, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I can take it, I guess. So Dutch clover is, seeing more and more interest as far as mixes go with stands of turf. The one big negative there is that it's not super traffic tolerant. So if you have kids or you're out in your yard a lot or you have dogs, it's going to not handle the foot traffic as well. It's not going to recuperate as quickly. And so then it becomes bare soil or the ground becomes compacted and then nothing grows in there with the repeated foot traffic on it. And so that's kind of been the one big holdup for a lot of people as far as that goes. That it just doesn't handle the foot traffic that most yards receive.
All right. So you could use it as a ground cover in an area where you're not going to be walking a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You could definitely, as long as you're not walking on it or using that part of the yard, it would work as a ground cover.
All right. Chad, does that answer your question?
No, that's it. I appreciate it. Thank you very
much. All right. Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got another lawn question. This one from Don in Ames. Hi, Don.
Yeah, this is Don.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question is, I've got some clumps or bunches of what I'm pretty sure is tall fescue. Is there a good way to eliminate that from my lawn? And also, I've got a different species of coarse-bladed grass that grows in areas. People refer to it as water grass, but I don't really know what it is. Is there a way to have that identified?
All right. Adam, were you able to hear that? I know we've got a lot of road noise there.
Yep. Okay. I think so. It's a two-part question.
Yep.
First part, got tall fescue clumps in the yard. What do you do? If it's not a huge number, you can go ahead and take a pocket knife and pull those. They're bunch type grass, so as long as you pull them at the base, you can remove them that way. If it's scattered throughout your yard, you'd have to use a non-selective herbicide if you don't feel like you can pull those. Remember, non-selective herbicide means that it's going to remove any plant material that herbicide touches. As far as the water grass goes, that's kind of a term that's thrown around for a lot of different grassy weeds, everything from quack grass to crabgrass, goose grass as well. So one of the options that you could do is you could send a sample into the Iowa State Plant and Insect Disease Clinic, and they could help you identify for sure what type of grass it is, and that would help you figure out how to prevent it then in the future.
All right. It's good to know what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You can. We're going to do some email questions here. And of course, you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Ray. We planted a mix of black dirt, compost, and grass seed on about 40 bare spot poor soil areas in our yard. Most have germinated. Two questions. Do I continue to water? And if so, how much and how often? And is it too late to plant new seed for those areas that haven't sprung up? So let's start with, do I continue to water?
Yeah, do you continue to water? Absolutely. Go ahead and continue to give it water. How much? You know, a young seedlings, I would give it every other day just a little bit of water, just to kind of wet the soil, keep those seedlings so they don't dry out, especially with the high winds we've had. And go ahead and do that for, you know, the next couple weeks. Obviously, when we get highs, you know, not in the mid-50s anymore, the grass is really going dormant. Or if the color starts to go on it, then that grass is shutting down for the year and you don't have to worry about watering it. The other part of the question, is it still, can I still seed? I think at this point in time, I would probably tell you that you could just save the seed until the spring. It's probably not going to germinate much. You could always put it out as a dormant seeding, but be aware that a lot of that grass is going to probably be food for the birds over the winter.
All right. We've got a question for you, Aaron, from Fran in Ames. We just purchased a couple of sale knockout rose bushes in 8-inch pots. When planting at this time, should we add fertilizer to the soil? Also, should they be trimmed back? They're flowering now or planted as is and cover with mulch.
A knockout rose planted this time of year, any rose planted this time of year, I would not fertilize. Save the fertilizer for the spring as it's starting to bud out, or usually the best time to fertilize roses is just as the first, just after the first flush of flowers in the late spring, early summer. I would not trim back a knockout rose. Many of them are marginally winter hardy. So if we have a really harsh winter, you will see some dieback on the plant. So you want as much plant material as possible to go through the winter. I would prioritize fencing it off to keep bunnies and other animals away from it over the winter months. Roses in particular are very attractive winter food for deer and rabbits, and it only takes a couple bites to cause a lot of damage. But definitely plant it. Make sure you water it in, and make sure you water it when needed. So if the root ball dries out, all the way up until the ground freezes.
All right. And here's a question for you, Adam, one I know you get a lot. Is there still time to treat our lawn for Creeping Charlie? And if so, what is the suggested treatment?
Yep, probably the most popular question I get in the fall. Yeah, you can still treat for Creeping Charlie. And now's a great time to treat through, you know, even right after the first frost. Goes, a product that contains a large amount of triclopyr herbicide is going to be the most effective. That herbicide seems to have the best ability to remove Creeping Charlie.
All right. And Aaron, this is from Virginia. I had a maple taken down in my backyard. What is your recommendation for a replacement on a small lot in town? I'm 75 years old, so no very slow growing trees and no more maples.
All right. So I would lean towards the three that I would look at first are red oak. Red oak, unlike other oaks, is more quickly growing. So that's a possibility. I would look at ginkgo as an option. They are very nice residential trees, especially in the setting that she described, has amazing fall color too. I would also look at some of the newer hybrid elms. So there are several varieties of American elm or hybrids of American and Asian elm that look a lot like the traditional American elm that was wiped out by Dutch elm disease so many decades ago. So those are also pretty fast growing trees. And most of them have really patriotic names like Patriot and Jefferson and Freedom and stuff like that. But they are really nice. Potential shade trees for your yard.
All right. It feels appropriate for election season, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. She has a follow-up question. This one goes to you, Adam. Is it too late to plant grass where the stump was removed?
Yeah. Again, it's the temperatures are cooling down so rapidly, I would probably just wait till the spring to seed.
All right. And that's just good advice all the way around. We always we talk about it over and over again, talking about waiting for that window of opportunity in mid-August through September, and then it passes and we wait again.
Yep.
All right. We will continue in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Adam Toms, turfgrass specialist with Iowa State University Extension and Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With us today, Adam Toms, turfgrass specialist with Iowa State University Extension, and Aaron Stile, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And next on the line is Bob. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have oak trees in my yard. I just moved to a house. I can't believe as many oak trees there are. Do I pick them up? Do I mulch them? And if I don't pick them up, will they kill my grass?
All right. And you're asking this. We've talked about this hour, but you're asking because you have so many leaves that you're concerned that mulching won't work?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
All right.
would mulching kill? I mean, when I moved there, the yard was nice and all the leaves are up in the air. And now, I mean, it's inches of leaves.
All right.
The kids are having fun, but I don't want to kill the grass.
Right? Thanks for your call, Bob. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you can probably mulch those. You might have to mow several different directions. I mean, the key is when you're done mulching that you should see the grass blades through the leaves. So that's the key. And so you might have to mow two different directions, just enough to get those leaves to chop up and fall down through the turf canopy.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bob. 866-780-9100 is the number. Betty Lou is in Tiffin next. Hi, Betty Lou.
Yes, hi. I have a hibiscus plant and want to know the best care for it over the winter. I don't have a place to put it in the house, but I could use a furnace room and it could be in the dark. Is that the best thing to do, is to let it go dormant over the winter?
So it's likely one of the tropical species of hibiscus, and they really do best as a house plant over the winter. They don't really go dormant very well. You could induce a kind of a semi-dormancy in it by withholding water, but overall the plant would not respond well to that. That particular plant wouldn't. So if you can find a place to overwinter it in front of a sunny window, it will still likely drop most, if not all, of its leaves and then grow a new set when you bring it inside. That's very common for hibiscus. If it's too big to do that, your other option could be to trim it back so that it's smaller and overwinter it as a smaller plant, or you could take cuttings and root those cuttings over winter and have new, smaller plants next spring.
All right. Betty Lou, thank you so much for your call. Dennis is up next in Marion. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
We just planted some daffodils and tulips and stuff. I was wondering how much watering we should be doing for them.
All right. How much to water those spring blooming bulbs?
Yeah. You'll want to water them in after they're planted to kind of get the soil settled in, get good contact with them, all of that. And then it really depends on the weather, but you're going to want, if the soil dries out in the upper inch or so of soil, that will be a good cue to water again. And unlike turf, these you're going to want to water infrequently and deeply when you do. So if it doesn't rain, you will probably want to give them a little bit of water in the next couple of weeks. And this will be something you'll want to consider all the way up until the ground freezes. So that's usually, you know, the upper layer is usually kind of after Thanksgiving, first part of December. So you want to consider it then. The good news is bulbs are pretty tough. So even if you accidentally skip a watering or even if it is incredibly dry, they'll probably pull through okay. But watering them well this first fall after planting will set them up for really good success for many years down the road.
All right, Dennis, thank you so much. And of course, it's been particularly dry. So this year, that may be even more important. Brian is on the line next in Robbins. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Good. What's your question?
Well, we had seven trees from the windstorm go down on our garage, and we had them cut up and hauled away and had the roots ground out, and we raked out all the chips. And what I want to know is if we need to put down some topsoil or if we can try seed right on top of what's there.
If you ground the roots out of it, you should be okay to seed right into that.
All right. Sounds simpler. Let's go next to Linda in Parkersburg. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, we have a large circle of dead grass in our front yard, and it's just a perfect circle. So I called MidAmerican Energy, and they came and they said, nothing's wrong. And underneath, there's no gas leak or anything. And if it rains really, really hard, it starts growing back. Otherwise, it just stays dead. And I didn't know if there was grubs or something. I don't know what to do.
My guess, more than anything, is that you have a grassy weed. And I'm guessing that it's rough bluegrass, which is a grass that likes to, it likes cool temperatures and it likes shade. It does not like dry or heat. And so my guess is that that's what you probably have. And so what you're describing is perfect symptoms of that. When it rains and it cools off, it takes over an area. When it gets hot and dry, it kind of dies out and it spreads above the ground, and it could work in a nice little circle. So I would guess that's what you have. In the spring, I would just try to overseed some other grasses into it, some Kentucky bluegrass to try to, you know, compete and maybe disguise that area.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Linda. And now we've got Evelyn on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a redbud tree, and I really like it, so I don't want it to die. It's growing up very well, but it's the branches reach too low, and I can hardly get under it to mow the lawn and that. So if I trim those branches off, is there anything I need to do? Or number one, can I trim them off? And do I need to do anything so it doesn't bother the tree?
So if you'd like to remove some branches, the best time of year to do that is going to be late winter, like mid-March. And there's no need to put any pruning paint or sealer or anything like that. When you make the cut, you'll want to leave behind the little swollen base of the stem. So it kind of looks like a turtleneck around the base. And so what that means is on a red bud, you'll probably be leaving behind about maybe half an inch of a little bit of a stump. Don't make a flush cut. And that allows the tree to kind of seal off that area and be as healthy as it can be after those pruning cuts. The other thing to keep in mind that you probably don't want to remove more than about a third of the entire plant in one pruning session. So if there are several large branches that you need to remove, you might have to spread them out over a couple of growing seasons.
All right. But you probably only have one more mow or so to go this year, so you can struggle through that one and wait until just the perfect time. Evelyn, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. This is a question from Connie, and she says, I'm guessing the answer to this question will start with laughter, but I thought I'd ask it anyway. Is there any way to discourage squirrels from burying walnuts in your yard? My neighbor has a walnut tree, and the squirrels bury walnuts all over my yard. Walnuts are poisonous to dogs. My dogs can smell that the squirrels have been there, and several times I've caught them chewing on walnuts, and it worries me. And again, I know that this is a little bit outside of your area of expertise, gentlemen. I don't think there's any way to discourage squirrels from burying them in your yard. But Adam, if you have walnut seedlings growing in your yard, regular mowing should take care of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the seedlings would be easily mowed out.
All right. And Connie, if this helps you at all, I have a ton of walnut trees and I have three dogs and I've never had a problem. But I do know that walnuts can be poisonous to dogs, so it's good to keep an eye on it. This is from Dell in Cedar Falls. What should I do with my young asparagus patch before winter? Should I cut back the stems which have gone to seed? Aaron?
Most of the time, we recommend leaving all of the stems through the winter. They'll kind of catch leaves and some other things that kind of help insulate the patch over the winter, and then clean it all up really early in the spring before the new spears start coming out. But leaving that stuff in place over the winter is the best.
All right. Jim is on the line next in Hudson. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I overseeded my lawn this fall with the grass seed and fertilizer and aerated at the same time, and now I'm pulling my aerator behind my lawnmower when I mulch my leaves. Is that a good practice?
Yeah, that's fine. That's, aeration is always a good thing, and so, you know, as long as you're driving over your yard to mulch up the leaves, poking a few extra holes isn't going to hurt the yard at all right now.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good news. Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. Here's a question, another grass question. This one's from Lynn. I have new grass about 2 inches tall that I've been watering since planting a few weeks ago. With frost coming soon, should I cover it with straw or leaves and keep watering, or just let it be?
No, I would just let it be. If you're at 2 inches, you know, you're getting really close to that first mowing, and so I definitely wouldn't cover it. That's actually going to do more harm than good. So just let it be. It'll be fine. That frost is, you know, not really going to harm that.
All right. And a little bit more water wouldn't hurt either, sounds like, from what you were saying earlier.
Right. Yeah. Make sure it's got adequate water for sure.
All right. Here's a question from Georgie Ann in Garnavillo. I transplanted some peonies about 3 weeks ago. They look like they're coming up now. Should I do something?
No, and there's not much you can do anyway. It's not uncommon. Peony is a pretty hardy plant. Just keep watering. Do not fertilize. Water when needed, and just kind of wait. You could, if you were a little bit worried, after probably around Thanksgiving time, you could put a nice layer of mulch or kind of leaves over this area to help give it a little blanket for the winter. I'm sure it would appreciate that. Just make sure that you remove it in late winter, early spring, usually mid-March, later March is the best time to do that.
All right. And she also has a second question. I cut some sedum and I put it in a vase. It looks like it's rooting. Would it survive if I tried to plant it?
It probably would, although we're getting close enough now to the end of the growing season that the winter might be kind of rough on it. All the plants that are outside right now have been slowly kind of conditioning themselves, getting ready for winter. And that cutting, if it's inside, has not gone through that process yet. So if it hasn't been outside, it would definitely live, but the winter might be really rough on it. And so if it's small enough and you don't mind holding on to it, you could grow it indoors through the winter and plant it out in spring after the danger of frost has passed. If you wanted to chance it, right at that line where I would be a little worried about it. But again,
sedum is a pretty hardy plant, so it might be worth a try, especially if you're not worried about potentially losing it, since it was kind of a happy accident to begin with.
All right. And here's another overwintering question from Donald in Rockford. I have two potted mum plants. Can they be kept over winter to grow next year? If so, how? I have a heated garage. It's about 50 degrees.
In theory, they may be able to be overwintered, but mums are notoriously very difficult. And there's two big reasons why. Many of the mums we buy this time of year are not very winter hardy, if at all, for us this far north in Iowa. And mums in general, even the ones that are hardy, need more time to establish in the garden by being planted in the spring to do well and overwinter well. You could overwinter them in kind of a semi-dormant phase or even a dormant phase in the garage. I've always practically found that kind of work really difficult. I always forget about them. It's hard to kind of regulate them. They dry out and those kinds of things. In most cases, mums that you would buy this time of year or plant this time of year should be treated as annuals. And there are lots of plants that would live year-round if it didn't get cold. Marigolds, petunias, impatiens, all of those things we have no problems letting go of in the fall. And it's okay to let go of your mum, too, if you don't mind.
All right. It's very hard for people. And I can tell from the way you're saying that, Aaron, that a lot of people have a really hard time with this. We'll talk about it again when everybody buys their poinsettias at Christmas time.
Yep. And I understand it. I completely understand it. It's okay, though. You know, some plants are okay to be temporary.
And you're employing people who grow those beautiful plants as well. Maybe that helps. All right. Well, last phone call of the day. Valerie's on the line in Ames. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I have a question about whitefly. I have whitefly in my outdoor tomato plants, but I also have whitefly, and so it has gone over into some of my indoor plants that I leave outside for the summer. I've been spraying them with water, the indoor plants, to knock the whitefly off. But I'm concerned about bringing them in and having whitefly in the house. And is there something I can do with the ones in the tomato plants? Or doesn't it matter?
There's probably nothing you need to do for the ones in the tomato plants. Winter will help take care of a lot of those issues. For your house plants, probably your best pass forward is when you do bring them in from outside, give them a real good cleaning in the tub, shower, with a garden hose outside if it's warm enough, and then you're going to want to isolate them from everything else. Whitefly can be difficult because it's a very mobile pest, so you'll want to watch it very carefully, and as soon as you start to see something erupt in terms of populations of whitefly, you're either going to want to treat it. And indoors, I like to start with things like insecticidal soap or neem, and then ramp up from there if it's not as effective as I want it to be. Make sure you do that as soon as you start to see evidence of it. And then if it's something that's been, you know, you're struggling with for weeks and weeks and weeks and you still can't seem to figure it out, it may be better to discard the plant than to expose all of your other plants from getting this really pesky pest.
All right. Valerie, good luck with that. Aaron Style, thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Adam Tomes, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Talk of Iowa.